All right. And this, being the
fourth of the series,
concerns itself with
the most favorable processes. At this time, I would say, by calculation, that there was some 10 to the 18th or 20th or 31st power techniques. To know all of these techniques and to know everything that they do is almost impossible. Now, there's really no reason to go over most of these techniques except in passing to people who are interested in investigation, search, phenomena. But an auditor wanting results is apt to fall into the track of going back over all these techniques one after the other if he's not careful. Because he will get, either in his own case or in the case of some person he's processing, philosophic twist of mind which starts delivering up all manner of computations and answers about existence and combinations of thinkingness and combinations of interrelations which themselves amount to, in the aggregate, the track that has just been followed for 3 years. He would find, if he used the techniques which we are now using, facsimiles, the theta mess theory, all of these things would come up. He would find lock scanning. He would find grief charges. He would find methods of repetition. He would find all the techniques involved in PDH, pain drug hypnosis. He would go on and on and on with endless amounts of data. This universe specializes in data. We're not interested as much in data as we're interested in results, because a collection of data is only an examination of the past. And we are interested in predicting a future. And if we're interested in predicting a future, then it's obvious that the best way to predict the future is to make it. That sounds highly adventurous. But let me assure you that the only time in the past when you've ever thought hard is when you didn't have, or thought you didn't have, enough force, enough energy, enough mess, or enough ability or skill to overcome the opposition with which you believed yourself to be faced, and you started to think. Force is a substitute for a complete pervasion. Force is the first entrance into randomity, and below that is thinking and figuring. And so a person starts to think on a low level of the society, when he considers that he is unable to put out enough force to solve his problem. Whatever you want to call it, however brutal this may seem to you, it follows through. Thinking results from an insufficiency of supply. That tells you then that the person who was very dependent upon the exterior environment for his supply would think very hard, and would then become dependent upon his exterior environment entirely for thinking. He would become a puppet, in the last analysis, wouldn't he? And so we go on this gradient scale of the fellow at first realizes that he says, let's see now, I think I will take on this galaxy. And then he finds out he doesn't have quite enough force to do that, so he says, well, we confine ourselves to the solar system. And by the time he's about 2, he says, well, let's see, I'd better confine myself to the world, this town, my family.
And now he gets to be 32, and he says, well, I can barely confine myself to me. Because if I were just a little bit bigger, I could handle me. In other words, if I had just a little bit more force, I could direct the actions of my body efficiently. So the best way to do is to figure out how to train my body better. It's not that thought is junior to force, but compulsive thought directed toward a prediction of the future is prompted by an anxiety of the future, and the future, anxiety about the future, results only from a recognition that one has insufficient force to overcome the obstacles which will greet him in the future. Therefore, thinking in an effort to predict what is going to happen could be on two levels. One, a very, very, very high level, by which a fellow is just playing with it. He's just fooling around and so on. It's lots of fun. Scientists do this. These people are fantastic. They can be physically at the bottom of the scale and mentally at the top of the scale almost simultaneously. And you'll see this happen as long as they're tinkering around with a ham radio set or a formula for something. Why, they're just as happy and pleased. It doesn't matter whether this formula works out or not. They're not doing that because they have an insufficiency of force, you see. They're just interested, something to look at, something to play with. And then they go home. And when they get home, they really start thinking because there they have problems. They've got the wife, she's not interested in chemistry. And they've got the kids, and they seem to make an awful lot of racket. And if he could just make a little more money, why, then he could solve some of these problems. And that kind of thinking simply results from the fact that very many factors object to his reaching out and cracking a couple of skulls. And it results from the fact that when he goes down to the grocery store, the grocer stands there, you see, and says, money. It results from an insufficiency of supply. It results from the fact that he doesn't have a big enough house. He doesn't have enough wives. Insufficiency of supply, right down the books. All right. When he comes up against that thinking process, he is into the field of anxiety. And you will find some very splendid thinkers in the field of science, so on, who are just marvelous as long as they're at work. And who are terrible social blunders. Not make social blunders, they are social blunders. You recognize what's happening there. The man is trying to predict the future at home because of an insufficiency of force, supply, energy, whatever you want to call it. So there's two levels at which theta operates. And you'll find it operating in every human being the same way. And one of these levels we call analytical thought. We really even shouldn't call it analytical thought, and we don't. Well, we did in the first book, so we've kind of been stuck with it. What we are calling it now, more technically, is a mathematical symbol, which, being defined by its own definition, does not open up things to argument. We simply call it theta or thetans. That's fine. Theta is a Greek letter which in itself symbolically represented thought. So let's just scotch the whole problem and just put a mathematical symbol there and not have any further semantic arguments and say this theta then operates in its purest level just on an observational, computational level which is not interfered with by stimulus-response mechanisms. It doesn't think because something is compelling it to think. It thinks because it's interested. And the other level of thought is simply gotta and can't. And that, of course, is where human beings think at home. So we run into these two levels and we get the paradox called man.
and man is doing what he's doing and misbehaving the way he's misbehaving because he thinks he has to, because he has an insufficiency of energy to overcome his future obstacles. Any thief in jail will tell you he had to do it. Pretty boy Floyd, I think his name was, wept very gently in jail because actually he was an unfortunate creature. He was a victim of circumstances. When the police officer for whose murder he was being jailed had walked up to the car, it just came over him that he had to shoot him. And he did, and he went to jail, and he explained to all the reporters that he was really a good man at heart, but he just had to do it. And so does everybody believe when he gets into this maze called computation in this environment, into the just have to do it and can'ts. Insufficiency of supply. This is reflected very broadly. You know, every once in a while somebody will walk down the street and he will need a hat. And he'll see that there's a hat sale, and he will have an excess $10 in his pocket, and he'll look at the hats, and there's a hat there he likes very much, and he looks at the hat and then walks on down the street without buying the hat. Why? Well, he knows his insufficiency of supply is so great that he can't have a hat. There's a stimulus response. It is not rational. There's no reasonableness to this. He has the money in his pocket. He has the time to go in and buy the hat. He needs the hat. There is the hat he wants, and he doesn't buy the hat because he can't have a hat. Why can't he have a hat? Now, you could go over and talk with somebody on this line and try to argue him into realizing that he doesn't have an insufficiency of supply. And he will still have an insufficiency of supply. You can reason, talk, cajole, bribe, do anything you want to, this reactive mind, in an effort to lead it into a reasonable activity and adjudication of its environment, and it will still go on being a normal human being. You can, however, reduce its motion. Its motion reduces, but doesn't increase. The reason the motion of the reactive mind doesn't actually increase in terms of controlled motion, which is to say increase in terms of better procurement of energy, is because it isn't manufacturing any energy. It is borrowing energy from elsewhere and using it. Now, it starts borrowing this energy from the beingness of the person himself, which is, we call, Thetan, again, a mathematical symbol. Thetan doesn't mean spirit, soul, or anything else. It's just avoiding all those terms. It's just saying no responsibility, no responsibility. It's just a thing. All right? And the reactive mind has an insufficiency of supply, and the Thetan, the being of the person, that's you, by the way. People go around talking about, my Thetan thinks. You're just listening to some more of this reactive mind. Because a person doesn't have another Thetan. He's it. When he says I, and what he means by I, and everything he means by I, is him, and that's the Thetan. And the Thetan gets a lot more things added to him that are not necessarily him, but he's appropriated them too, and Freud called it alter ego, because it was a nice term. Well, the same way we use Thetan as a nice term, the Thetan there, it may be still perfectly competent to use, create, and use energy. But the reactive mind with which this being is still connected is energy hungry. Terrifically hungry for energy. And so every time the being puts out a little erg of energy, the reactive mind, the thing the analytical mind is running, the reactive mind soaks up from the actual reasonability of the person what little bit of energy the reasonableness of the person puts out because of an energy starvation. You see that? A person could be very, very competent in creating and directing energy. And every time he creates a little energy, it sort of disappears. He doesn't quite know where it goes. And before this, he never knew where it went. Now, you ask this person to exteriorize. That is to say, you ask this person to be a little distance from the body. This will come to a lot of people as a shock when you do this to pre-clears. You just get in off the street, you just say, be 3 feet back of your head now. The fellow says, all right, I am. Now, hey! Big shock. He finds out just in that moment there that he doesn't happen to be an integral part of this mess thing. Now, when he's 3 feet back of his head, he has some little chance of putting out a couple of ergs of energy without getting him soaked up, as long as he doesn't have his attention immediately upon the body. But if you could put him out there several miles, he could then safely generate some energy, because it wouldn't immediately be taken away from him by the reactive bank. Now, the reason the reactive bank can take it away from him is because a large portion of the reactive bank is his own. This is just old stuff that he picked up like goats chew up tin cans. And he just sort of picked this up here and that up there, and he's got this old favored facsimile that he swiped someplace, and he's just got junk all around, and it didn't mean anything, and it didn't do anything to him until one day he got into confluence with a body. And when he got connected with the body, he put this stuff into the body too, like you put things in the trunks in the attic. And now it matches his wavelength, and he can control the body better, and this works out just fine, only he isn't quite sure how it's working out, but it works out. But every time he thinks he's matching the wavelength of what he put in there, and all of his control of the body, and everything he's ever taught the body, is matching up with his wavelength, and so every time he thinks, the body picks up any energy which is created. And it starts to act as a sponge on a starvation of energy. And as a result, when he makes a facsimile, the facsimile itself is pulled in just like it was water going into a sponge. And when the Phaeton puts out a little beam of energy, bam, that goes into the body. Now, I'm not talking about anything strange or esoteric, because all of these things have been strange and esoteric. One has a feeling that maybe they still are. But if you just take PC after PC and you say, be 3 feet back of your head, I'll be 8 miles back of your head, now that's fine. Now put out a beam of energy, now I'll walk across the ceiling, now I'll try and change something, and then I'll come back and pick up the body and throw it over on the couch, and he does it. Every once in a while, you get a pre-clear that does it just like that. He doesn't know anything about what you're doing. You have to assume, if it keeps happening, person after person, that it must be an objective phenomenon instead of an objectionable one. I dare say, however, that you could go on trying to teach Aborigines or something the fact that when meat was decayed, it made their stomachs ache, and they probably go right on blaming God. But this is possible that you could do this. But there are a lot of people around that are very, very hard to convince on this. I've had an auditor say to me, well, I know my pre-clears really don't exteriorize. Why do you know they really don't? Well, it never shows up on the E-meter. Well, what pre-clears have you tried to exteriorize? Well, right after I finished the course, I tried one. And he couldn't, so I've given it up. What do you have them do now? Well, I double terminal them. Well, what does that do? Oh, it makes them feel more comfortable. Why don't you tell... By the way, during the course, did anybody tell you to be 3 feet back of your head? Well, a fellow tried it once, and I wasn't, so... In other words, he's just working on a complete no-action basis. He knows it can't be true. You take the same fellow and start acceptance-level processing, and what do you find? Acceptance of exterior energy. Nothing but. Just the thought of stepping back of his head, you see, puts out enough energy to really start pushing him back of his head. And that energy goes, and there goes the thought, so he knows it can't happen. Very magical. Nothing up the sleeves. You see how that would work out? Therefore, the fellow couldn't believe it. So you have to have another technique. And that other technique would merely consist of feeding the bank enough energy until it was no longer starved, and the fellow could think of stepping 3 feet back of his head without the energy connected to the thought being absorbed, and therefore the thought disappearing. Now, it's a horrible thing that actually the actual being of a person could think the most wonderful and pleasant and esoteric thoughts in the world and have them instantly disappear. Have you ever had a preacher, you said, put up a mock-up? Energy pictures, what a mock-up is, nothing more nor less. Put up a mock-up out there of a girl. He says, tent. You say, no, go on out, just put up an energy picture of a girl out there, put up a big tent. Come on, try. Well, I almost did that time. Well, I'll do it some more. Yeah, I can get a picture of a girl. What are you She's gone. Well, put up a few more. All right. Yeah, you know what happens? I put this picture of this girl out there, and she slides into this black cloud over here. Now, that's been going on ever since he's been putting up pictures of the girl. But putting out the energy itself, the energy of putting it out was also absorbed. The memory of its appearing and being seen was also absorbed by the bank, and it made a complete wipeout. If you as an auditor recognized this, you could see a great deal of sense in good old self-analysis. You just keep putting these mock-ups there. The person says, but my mock-ups have no persistence. I put them out there and they're gone. I put them out there and they're gone. And sometimes I can't put up mock-ups of some things at all. What's happening to those mock-ups? They're chunks of energy, and they're being soaked up by the reactive mind like a sponge. And they're soaked up so fast, and the impression of them being soaked up also goes with their being soaked up, and so the person doesn't think he can put out a mock-up. And if you just keep it up, one of the worst cases I ever saw in this, I made a sort of a test out of. I just set him to work for 2 hours a day and was on the telephone and so on, making sure that he was doing it. And he was pretty good. He went on and did it. He did it for about 6 weeks at about 2 hours a day, and he could get the prettiest mock-ups. And one day somebody said to him, why don't you be 3 feet back of your head? And he was. He said, there's nothing surprising about this. He said, I knew I could do this all the time. Now, here you have the snake eating himself all up, starting in at his tail. And when a case gets too starved for energy, it responds like a sponge for energy. And it starts to pick up everything inflowing. And it specializes in inflows. And it specializes in betrayal, of course, because betrayal is getting the anchor point smashed in. It specializes in anything and everything you can think of that has anything to do with collapsing anchor points. Because every time the case tries to put out a little bit of space, those anchor points, themselves being energy, come right into the bank and are absorbed. It's just a question of mechanical, just plain, ordinary energy. And the reactive mind is so starved for energy that it has to figure all the time how it's going to get more energy. And it doesn't care how, whether it gets it by being run over by a truck, or by eating fish, or anything else. Anything goes. And this is the behavior of the reactive mind. What we normally consider the reactive mind would be the body. But the actual part of it is that Satan has a reactive mind of his own. It's this bric-a-brac he carries around. See, out there in space, you get minus 270 degrees or almost in a vacuum, and electricity behaves in a peculiar fashion. It has no resistance. You could make a bomb this way. Somebody over in Russia wrote a paper on it. I suppose they shot him immediately. And Russia probably has now issued a manifesto saying it now possesses this as a weapon, that being their usual cycle. They take something at absolute zero, and having no resistance, they keep pumping a can full of energy. And of course they could pump billions and billions and billions of volts into a can. And then when they took it out, and it would all of a sudden warm up. What a terrific electronic flash you would get. Because no resistance, you see. It presents the silly problem of having a quart can into which you could pour a tank car full of milk. And it all goes into the quart can because it's absolute zero. And now you put it out where it's warm, and you've got a tank car full of milk again, only you've got it too quick, so it splatters over the landscape. Now, a thetan is into this. When a thetan is in the vicinity of absolute zero, his own energy behaves accordingly. Hasn't any resistance. There's nothing to use the energy. He just uses it. He put it out this way and that way and tie it in ribbons and do other things with it. There's nothing to it. Then he gets down here, and he's got air, and it's warm, and it's not a vacuum. And he wonders what's happened to his energy. He can't make it anymore. Every once in a while, a thetan will pull in something that was packaged one way or another. He didn't quite know how, and I don't know quite how he packages it. And you get a terrific explosion in your pre-clear, or in front of him, or behind him. And a lot of your cases have gone down tone scale immediately following an electronic explosion which occurred after an operation. You ask them, they say, what was the exact symptom when you started to go downhill? They can't remember. It's a dispersal, of course. Well, what was the symptom? They think this over for a long time. And they say, well, I don't know. I remember I was operated upon for gallstones. About 3 nights later, it seems to me, I woke up in the middle of the night and there was a blinding flash in my stomach. Now, it's hard for a person to recall those things. The easiest way to make them recall it is just tell them to start mocking up explosions. And if he starts mocking up explosions, all the data about explosions will eventually come into his possession. But here, we needn't go so far afield as absolute zero or thetans or anything else to get anywhere with this argument. All we have to do is start feeding the reactive mind energy, and the reactive mind stops this think, and starts straightening up. Now, the energy is a somethingness. The somethingness has to have a nothingness around it, and you start feeding the reactive mind space, lots of space, you reduce the havingness of the pre-clear. The real answer is to start feeding him space, but you can't do this because it starts to evaporate the energy which he has. And you give him more and more space and more space, and he has less and less and less and less, and you're coming down to where he has identified himself with nothing. The thetan thinks he's nothing because his first contact with the mesh universe is space, and space is nothing. And so he's space as far as he's concerned. You could theoretically run out this whole thing. You could run out the idea that he was nothing by simply running out space with Q&A, which I'll give you during these lectures. But you reduce his havingness. And if you will go out and find a little child who is eating candy and you jerk the candy away from him, what will a little child do? And if you keep taking candy away from him, what will he do? Eventually go into apathy. It doesn't necessarily follow that if you keep giving him candy, he will go way up tone scale, but he'll sure be cheerful about it. So you don't want to take all the candy away. As much as a thetan would hate to admit it, energy is delicious. It's real candy. And you'll get some character processing himself, and he'll process himself endlessly. Just like candy. Just go on and on because it tastes so good. But he doesn't dare admit that it tastes so good, you see. He's got to have a reason for doing it. Therefore, you'll find some cases it's almost impossible to run anything on the case but a concept. Because the concept will keep chewing up the energy and converting the energy, and it doesn't waste any energy. So the thing to do is to restore a lot of havingness to the pre-clear by the form of mock-ups. You give him havingness. Now, why do you go out on this cycle of returning his havingness? The only thing wrong with his thinking is his thinking. What is wrong with the mind is wrong in the mind. It isn't wrong on Jupiter. See, what's wrong with the mind is wrong with the mind. We have this unit called the mind. And we don't care what shape it is. We'll draw here a circle. And everything that is wrong with the mind is connected immediately and intimately with the mind. That sounds like one of these idiotic statements, but it's... Therefore, you're not going to get him over claustrophobia. You're just going to get him into a rigid control of claustrophobia by simply making him occupy small spaces, like closets. I'll show you, you little brat, cry in the dark. Swarm in the dark. That's the way to cure him. Well, they go into a sort of a rigid apathy about the dark, and after that somebody says, are you interested in the dark? Well, darkness worry? Doesn't worry me. No, doesn't worry me anymore. It used to, but it doesn't worry me anymore. Doesn't worry me a bit. Really doesn't worry me. Never think about it anymore. What are you asking for? All right. So there's trying to work it out in the meshed universe, you see. So the problems of the mind are in the mind. They are not on the Coca-Cola sign. Coca-Cola sign, which I mentioned earlier, may be in beautiful neon, but it does have this tremendous characteristic. It says, C-O-C-A, C-O-L-A, it says. Does it? Does it say anything? It sure doesn't. It's sitting there. And it's a certain form and shape, a series of geographical location in MEST, which has absolutely no meaning until you come along and read it. And then this series of shapes translates itself as a picture which goes back to a sound, which goes into a picture, which connects up with the stomach and the taste mechanism, and this horrible gooey syrup that they pour carbonated water in, regurgitates in the bank, and you know what you are looking at. You're looking at a sign that says Coca-Cola. Well, boy, that's really artificial between ourselves. That's going way around it, and so forth. But that's MEST talking. Anytime you can make a MEST appear to talk, you're going to get a chain of aberrations following it, by the way. When MEST can appear to talk, it can start to be sensible. And as soon as it starts to look sensible, watch out. Because it can't talk and can't think. This, by the way, is no condemnation whatsoever of books, television, radio, or motion pictures. These, which constitute the major aberrations of the society, it's no part of me to run them down. People want to be foolish enough to go to motion pictures, let them go. Let them go crazy. Now, a picture occurs in the mind only after this resistance and then want cycle takes place. See? Resistance. A picture will occur in the mind automatically when that happens. But pictures seldom occur of possessions which are not resisted particularly. But you get this concatenation of the desire of MEST all the way along the line, which is a reversal, and the MEST says that you want it because it's got gravity and you've mocked up the gravity, so obviously you've got all these computations on the thing and you need it. You have a reason, too. You have to get to work every morning with that car. That's beside the point that you work some maybe 5 hours out of your 8 to pay for that car, but that's beside the point. You have to get to work with that car. Big reason. So when you get this car, you actually have an object. Well, this is tremendously desirable, an object. It's a big mass of energy. Fine, there's nothing wrong with owning energy, nothing wrong with owning cars or anything else. But there's something wrong with the next abstraction, losing the car. Finance company. And here's a car. And then it's gone. Well, when that first happens to a fellow, he keeps a picture of it. It's very touching and nostalgic. A person only keeps pictures around of things he can't have. He only keeps blocks of energy around when he can't have energy. Isn't that sweet, nostalgic, and touching? The only reason, really, no matter what the preclear says, the only reason he's got that picture, the only reason he's got that picture of Papa, that keeps recurring to him all the time, Papa's a dog, Papa's no good. So the only reason he's got that picture is because he can't have Papa. So he's got a picture of Papa. Now you see this dramatized. The old lady who's lost a son has that picture square on the middle of the mantelpiece. That's right where it is. As long as he was alive and breathing and happy and cheerful, it was in the trunk or on the back of the piano or something. So she didn't need a picture. But now she hasn't got him, so she's got a picture. And that is the role of pictures. And one of the reasons, specious or spurious though the reason may be, why people have pictures. But that is one reason up from a more pertinent fact, just the raw fact of energy. Now the picture combines something that belongs exclusively to the Thetan, which is the aesthetic. The combination of energies and forms and spaces so as to create what a Thetan classifies as a pleasing object or emotion would be what an aesthetic is. Well, he could keep something just as an aesthetic and wind up by chewing it up just because he was short of energy. The energy has become important. This would be the degeneration of the person from an aesthetic individual to a very practical man. He started in with the pictures and wound up by chewing them up for energy. You see? So you can count on it with a preclear that what he's got in mental picture form is there because, one, he's short of energy, so he's got this picture because it represents a mass of energy, which he's liable to chew up someday, and he won't have that picture anymore either. The second reason is it's something he can't have. And when he really can't have it, and he knows he can't have it, and it's gone forever, it's a black picture. And he can't remember it. First he had a picture of it, you see, and then his energy scarcity made him eat up the picture, and now he hasn't even got the picture. So he says he needs pictures to remember. He doesn't need pictures to remember. He can make all the pictures he wants unless somebody's convinced him he can't. Or unless it seems beautifully sad or dramatic to him not to be able to. All right. So, the blackness, which you see accumulating, is many things. The blackness can be the blackness of nothingness, the blackness of space. Or it can be a blackness of substance, which is chewed up and charred energy, which is still better than no energy. The person who has solid masses of blackness packed around him is going around with a consolation that he's at least got some black energy. It's very, very insulting to him too when you suddenly point it out sometime, well, it's at least energy. You're not being properly sympathetic. All right. When then you evaluate a process, it would be along more or less the following forms. One, the weakest process is, one, does it convert a thought, energy, pattern into usable energy? That would be one. See? That would be the weakest process. And that would be concept running. What concept running does is he can't have the energy because the thought in it's too dangerous, he thinks. So you just run the thought out of it, and then he can at least have that little slice of energy. All you've done for him is give him that slice of energy, which he already had, but he can't use. You see that? And that would be the weakest process there is. Admissible at this time. Also, under that classification comes the running of an engram. You're running the perceptics out of an engram. You're running a slab of energy flat without destroying the energy. See, so the energy doesn't impinge and affect the way it is, and so it becomes a usable piece of energy. Restimulation is, gee, what a nice, beautiful, big piece of energy. Oh, Hey, wait a minute. Chronic somatic. He almost could eat it up. And he keeps it there and gimps and limps or stutters or twitches or something for the next 20 years in the hope that it'll all of a sudden go away and he'd be able to consume the rest of it. If there's an analytical thought on top of it at all, it's that one. And that's chronic somatic. Another thing is there gets to be a big scarcity of pain. Some pre-clears, you have to really fix them up so they can make up a lot of pain before they're happy. And then they get so they have to waste pain in brackets, and then they can have pain. And at that time, this now makes a lot of facsimiles available to them they didn't have before. So momentarily, they'll come up on an upsurge just because they can have pain. If they can have pain, then they can have a lot of the energy in the bank, you see? So then they can drain on this bank some more, and it'll go flatter and blacker. That's no good. That isn't really what you wanted to do with the case, but the fellow's a lot happier if he can do that. All right. Weakest process. The next process, admissible, as far as processing is concerned, according to my own investigation experience, is the restoration of energy to the bank. The restoration of energy to the bank. And such a process would simply be self-analysis. You just keep putting mock-ups out there. You can increase the fellow's havingness. You get him back to a point where he realizes he can at least have some mock-ups. He might not be able to get the real thing out here, but he can get some mock-ups. You see where we're going in this processing. The mock-up is the substitute for mass, or a substitute for a mass of energy. Because remember, we're working with three universes. And if he can't have a mock-up of his own, which is solid and can be stood up this way and patted together that way and pulled out that way, and he can mess around with this energy and so on. If he can't do that comfortably, if he can't create energy and blocks and solidities of that character and so on, well, the next thing to do is to show him that some does exist around, which is missed. And he's somewhat convinced he can't have that, so he's out of present time because he can't really find it. He knows it quite isn't there, and he can't have it, so he's out of present time. If he can't have present time, he can at least have blocks of energy. If he can't have the blocks of energy which exist right here and now, he can at least have them someplace in the bank. And so he gets thrown back on the time track, and you get the past tense manifestation of psychosis. That is to say, the psychotic soul is in the past. Why is he in the past? Well, he's got all the energy up, and he's way back there looking for some now. Of course, it drives him pretty batty, and he's in pretty terrible condition and so forth, but he's still got energy hunger. So that would be the next process. And the third process, on the level of acceptability, as far as he's concerned, number two, by the way, includes expanded Gita and acceptance level processing, any process which restores kinds of energy. The third one would be restoring a specialized cycle to the bank. And that would be just one thing, which we'll go into later, explosions. That's the most valuable kind of energy of all. Gee, that's wonderful. That's why you get all these boys down at Los Alamogordo chewing away at atom bombs. The glee with which they work on this would turn your a little bit pale. All right. Here you have one type of facsimile, which, when run, is tremendously effective. And the reason why is the explosion is the basic desirable thing, and it's what got him into wanting energy in the first place. So if you give him enough explosions, and he mocks up enough explosions, and mocks up enough explosions of brackets, and so on, why he's much better off. And this is coupled with running attention and admiration from the blackness which immediately follows the explosion. If part of the explosion is the blackness, you see, and that's where really the blackness gets nailed down on the case. All right, then. We get mobs of people admiring the explosion which explodes so noisily and beautifully and is followed by the blackness. We don't stop their admiration just because the blackness followed it. That was what happened in real life. So the blackness never quite went away.
So he still got this tremendous store of blackness in the bank. It's still energy. But you give him enough white energy, and the black energy has a tendency to go away. And it does go away. But you get admiration of it. That is, you just mock up huge masses of people looking up very admiringly at all of the explosion, particularly the black part of it, and the blackness gets more and more soluble and more and more soluble, and sometimes your preclear gets sicker and sicker and sicker and more horribly, and he feels terrible, and big compartments start to fly out of his mind, and big chunks of blackness start to disappear around his body, and this opens up communication lines to all kinds of facsimiles and that are all sucked dry, because, you see, when they're sucked completely dry, it left only blackness. And he couldn't communicate over that line anymore to the bank. And so it just stayed there, and all of a sudden it swells up, and this happens to be a time when Lord knows what happened, and he's suddenly confronted with a huge picture of an elephant immediately facing him. And various things happen which make life interesting. But that technique and that sickness is really only very bad when you don't back it up with objective processes. Now, you can run what I just told you, which is this third kind. You run the combination of lots of explosions and lots of admiration of explosions and so on. You're only getting into trouble if you omitted the objective type of process. Let's say you omitted the corners of the room and the other unlimited techniques as contained in SSSA. You keep those up and he just goes along. Now, those are the three first line processes right up to there. And the fourth one would consist of any process which put him into immediate cognizance and made available to him, obviously, so that he knew it, the messed universe, present time. We're going upstairs with these processes. We understand we started with the weakest one, and we're getting stronger ones now. And after he finds out we're really can have present time, and present time is wonderful, and so on, and after he can have these huge masses of energy, and so on, well, let's start him into the fifth one, which is the rehabilitation of himself as an energy output unit, including his personality. And that's the fifth process, the upper echelon one. Now we go above that and we get to what we were talking about in the doctorate courses, which is just the construction of your own universe, which is interesting. If you can make large masses of energy, you won't get anybody to be really interested in making his own universe unless he has big, beautiful, gorgeous blocks of energy that he himself can make and carve up and put together and so on. You know, there's nothing like something that you could get a good, solid contact on. Well, mess is good that way. You can get a contact on mess. It doesn't belong to you, but it might as well, because you had your hand in it, I'm afraid. We've talked about mess as a villain, but we're talking about it because I like people to agree with me sometimes. Not too often, but I like the no randomity. But you've got this whole messed universe as an antagonist if you insist upon being a single man who is not even part of the collective group. And so people agree with you when you say that messed universe did this. The messed universe didn't do that any more than any less than you did it to the messed universe. Actually, it's a series of overt acts on the part of the messed universe and your part that finally stuck you with a collapsed terminal on the messed universe. Now, you notice that we haven't gone into overt act phenomena. We haven't gone into engram. We haven't gone into parascientology at all, past lives, fact one, none of this material. And that's not because it isn't there anymore or somebody changed his mind. It's because we don't need to do it anymore. But if you want to know what's happening to your preclear and what he's talking about, it's very, very fortunate that we have dug up, exhumed, and brought to view a lot of phenomena
which will be uncovered and talked about by a preclear during processing, whether you like it or not. The preclear keeps saying, I can't get the camera away from in front of my face. You keep telling me to run this, but this camera keeps sticking in front of my face. You will say, that's very funny. It probably refers to a libido complex on the part of his father. Well, let's see. The camera represents pictures. Of course, he's talking about pictures. We've said something about facsimiles. So he probably has a necessity for facsimiles. That's probably what he wants. And so on. We'll just go on and neglect this thing. And we'll run it out next session. So you go down to the hospital. That's a FAC-1 machine, of course. And whether you like it or not, or when preclear doesn't like it, it's got so much energy connected in FAC-1. It's such a heavy block of self-created energy in fighting a camera-like projector that it has been particularly delicious at various times in the past. And now he's gotten to a point where it's no longer delicious. It's just plain nothing but agony left in it. He can't touch that thing any further. And he'll get lines of agony walking across his body from the left to the right, and the right to the left, and around. And furthermore, he gets them into every endocrine gland he has, because these were selected out one by one. And you'll get a sudden, terrific enlargement of the thyroid, and all sorts of things will happen. You say, well, that camera in front of his face? That doesn't mean a thing. We'll just go on to something else. You're in for trouble unless you do something about that camera in front of his face. What's the best way to do something about the camera? And that's simply to process just what I was talking about. Number four. Or number three, until you've got the camera gone, and make sure it's gone. Because it's phenomena you're going to encounter, whether you want it there or not. But it's in parascientology merely because we can't really accurately establish its source. But it's phenomena. In parascientology, we can weave beautiful pictures and pleasant dreams and speculations and be highly scientific and curious and interesting and so forth. But we don't necessarily have to get hanged with the data. So, what is the chains of reasoning then that you would follow in assessing a preclear? So as to know what process to follow with the preclear. Well, you look at the fellow and you see him very nice. He's in a body. If he's in a body, he's in bad shape. He's worried about Gertrude. He just can't seem to get it off his mind. You can't get him to concentrate. So you say, well, let's see, this case is, I don't know quite where we'll enter this case, but he keeps talking about Gertrude. Well, actually, I can tell you 100 ways we can process Gertrude. Oh, thousands of ways. We can run facsimiles. We can run overt acts. We can have him shoot Gertrude and Gertrude shoot him. And back and forth, and we can do all sorts of things, almost remarkable things, to get rid of Gertrude. And if we want to fool around with it, and you really want just this fellow, your fellow came to you because of Gertrude, and so forth, you can just run the concept. Gertrude is in present time. Gertrude is not in present time. Gertrude is here. Gertrude is not here. Now, we have a spot out in front of him, say, Gertrude is here, and Gertrude is not here. And after a while, he stops worrying about Gertrude. But that comes in that first echelon I mentioned, which is the weakest process, but yet got rid of an aberration. You go down to an insane asylum or something. Bolling wrote me the other day about some fellow that had 18 dozen electric shocks and a prefrontal lobotomy and had all his teeth kicked out. In other words, psychiatrists had amused themselves no end. Because he had a witch doctor who stood out in the front yard and gave him orders. And he said, well, nobody can see her but myself, but this was after the prefrontal lobotomy. He was still talking. Great shock. They wrote a huge, pages and pages in the psychiatric journal. Prefrontal lobotomy case, still able to talk. Anyway, he was out there in the front yard. I wouldn't mention the name of the hospital because I'd hate to condemn anybody in that hospital at all or give out any names. So we won't mention Sawtelle out in Los Angeles. We won't say a word about Sawtelle. But I'm sure the doctors there the psychiatrists, rather, not the doctors, are doing their absolute level best. I won't say their best to do what, but it's sure their best. Because here's the technique which springs this character who had a prefrontal lobotomy. He had a witch doctor out in the front yard, and she gave him orders all the time, and all the therapist would have had to do is, all right, get her certainty that she's there. That's all. Crumbled right at the edges, right where that entrance point. And then, of course, you would have gone on, your certainty that she's there, and just run it all ways from Sunday, and you would have finished off with it. So the only anchor point he had out, evidently, was one witch doctress that didn't exist. You'll find a lot of pre-clears have demons. They come in and start talking to you about demons. Mystics sometimes will talk to you about demons and so forth, and you start to get them down to works, and they'll say, well, we can't do this because this demon keeps flying around up in the air. They're not crazy. They're just being confidential. They thought this all their lives. Most people walking down the street kind of believe there's a demon around someplace. Of course, it's them. But anyway, it's a very good thing to ease the fellow's mind, so you give it some concentration. So you go in on that first level of case, and that's the highest level of abstraction you want to hit in the case. You don't want to go any further into abstraction than that. It's just this concept level. There are a lot of interesting and dynamite-ish things you could run. For instance, Dick Halpern mentioned me one that was just dynamite on this sort of thing, and it just throws the case into collapsed convulsions, practically. And you just keep running, it's mine, it's not mine, and I own it and I don't own it. You know, took sub-zero tone scale, start running it as brackets and concepts on certainty, and you really got a picnic on your hands. I tested this out. I'd run similar stuff. This is what I thought. Gee whiz, now he says it's mine specifically. I wonder if you just ran it's mine on some pre-clear. The next thing you know, what happened? This pre-clear's hand, Homo sapiens' hand, was straight up in the air and quivering like this, you see. As a thetan, he had re-stimulated himself, and he couldn't get his own arm down because the electrical discharge was too great in it. The body is mine. So I ran on this fellow, and his fingers were about flying off. If I'd kept it up, he probably would have shattered himself, but you couldn't keep it up any further. Just, it's mine. Not on anything particularly, except his body. It's mine. It's fascinating. Any of these concepts have a terrific level of workability. And if you get a resistive 5 case, you won't be able to get him to run anything else right at first. Unless you're a very, very insistent fellow. Because he knows what's wrong with him. He really knows what's wrong with him. It's Gertrude. Or it's demons. Or it's something else. He'll write you books about his own case. If you'd let him. He knows what's wrong. In other words, what's wrong with him is he's figuring. He's figuring because he hasn't got force enough to overcome it. He's thinking about it. Well, he can't think in terms of force, so he thinks in terms of words. That's the way we go on a case. Those are the most favorable processes of which I have any cognizance this time. Now, on the level of abstraction, there is a very cute process which devalencizes an individual fairly rapidly. And it's awfully nice on some cases to process the preclear instead of mama. You know, mama's sitting there, but you're supposed to be processing the preclear, and he's running out mama's problems. When you find yourself doing this, there is one, a process, which is very good about taking out valences, and this is called Q&A. Q&A stands for question and answer. And the answer to the question, or the question to the answer, are both the same. Because this is identification. And what is the question? It's the Coca-Cola sign. Is there any problem or abstraction connected with a Coca-Cola sign? No, the answer to a Coca-Cola sign in terms of MEST is a Coca-Cola sign. So it'd be the Coca-Cola sign as a question, feeling of a questionability with a Coca-Cola sign, a feeling of it, then you just turn the same sign, you understand, the same sign, not another sign, around facing the spot where it was as the answer. And a fellow, as he does this, begins to feel that he's resolving all the problems of existence. Because that's the truth. The only answer to a Coca-Cola sign is a Coca-Cola sign. The only answer to Mama is Mama. The only answer to Papa is Papa. The only answer to yourself is yourself. So if you just have a pre-career mocking himself up as a question, and then it's the answer, he starts to feel very learned. And most of the time, he won't be able to turn himself around facing himself. In other words, he won't be able to get out in front of his face or anything. He'll just sit there running question, answer. Identification, complete and utter. Identification of the complete maybe. The question, the answer. And that is the technique. Now, you have the pre-clear mock-up Mama's body over his own face as the question. Then you turn Mama's body around on him as the answer. And then you mock up Mama's body on his face as the answer. And then turn Mama's body around on his body as the question. And then you have him mock up his body, Mama's body out there, and have him put his body on Mama's body as the question, and then turn his body around as the answer. My, he feels so learned. Because that's all the questions and answers there are. And you do this with anybody he's concerned about, worried about, or in the valence of, and you'll produce enough of a shift of valence to materially influence a change of attitude on the part of the case. This is not a long technique, and it shouldn't be run very long. It's only when you run into such a tough valence problem or such a tough problem about some object that your processing is grossly interrupted, at which time you simply fly in with a little bit of Q&A and throw him out of the valence. You find that the person is in the valence of a bedpost. Therefore, the bedpost was the question, and it became the answer. And so you get him out of being a bedpost, and then you can process a human being. Okay, let's take a break. That's not the end of the afternoon session.